Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. Today, we're jumping right into a concise, high-signal cybersecurity briefing, really focusing heavily on Defendo actions. We are skipping the usual pleasantries because, honestly, the amount of ground we have to cover today is just, it's massive.
Yeah, it really is. We've got a lot on the desk today.
Right. So for you, the listener, our mission for this deep dive is to map out a truly massive shift in how cyber criminals are operating right now. We're looking at three newly uncovered reports from Cisco Talos, Trend Micro, and Kaspersky. And what we're tracking is a major pivot from manual targeted intrusions to these massive, industrialized, and totally automated campaigns that are, well, they're hiding in the absolute last places you'd ever look.
Exactly. And the sources we're pulling from today cover wildly different threat vectors. I mean, we're looking at global web servers, open source developer libraries, and even the physical dashboard of your car.
Which is wild. But they all point to one singular, genuinely chilling theme, which is the scaling up of cybercrime using AI and, you know, really deceptive infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the scale we're talking about with our first source is just hard to wrap your head around.
It's definitely a paradigm shift for defenders.
Yeah. So let's look at the Cisco Talos report. They detailed this Chinese-speaking cybercrime group dubbed UAT-10147. If the era of the lone hacker in a hoodie is dead, how is a group like this managing to attack at a massive global scale without defenders just, you know, instantly locking them out?
Well, they're doing it by fundamentally redesigning their workflow. It's no longer a manual craft, right? It's an assembly line. So Cisco Talos investigators uncovered an open directory at a specific IP address, 139.180.197.150.
Okay.
And sitting inside that directory, they found a target list. But this wasn't a list of, you know, a few dozen high-value companies. It contained approximately 170,000 URLs. Wait, 170,000? That is a staggering number. I mean, that's not a targeted sniper rifle. That is throwing a massive net over the entire internet just to see what gets caught.
Precisely. They were hitting servers across education, media, tech, gaming globally. They saw heavy concentrations in Brazil, Bolivia, China, Canada, and Vietnam. But from defenders' perspective, the way they manage that colossal list is what tells the real story.
How so?
Because if you just take a standard scanning script and point it at 170,000 targets all at once, you're going to crash your own offensive infrastructure. The bandwidth and memory requirements would just totally overwhelm their own servers.
Right, a self-inflicted denial of service attack.
Exactly. So they strategically split that massive list into 17 smaller, highly organized files of 10,000 URLs each.
Wow.
Yeah, it allows for highly efficient parallel processing. They're running multiple scanning engines simultaneously, each chewing through a manageable chunk of data. It is just pure optimization.
It's like a burglar who doesn't just walk down the street checking one door at a time, but instead uses like an AI-powered robot army to simultaneously check every single doorknob in a 100-mile radius, complete with automated blueprints of which locks are loose.
What's fascinating here is the sheer level of cognitive offloading happening through AI. UAT-10147 isn't just using generative AI to write convincing phishing emails, which is, you know, what we usually hear about.
Right, the usual ChatGPT stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Instead, they're integrating AI tools like PentestGPT and Deep Audit right into the pipeline. They're chaining them alongside traditional open source offensive frameworks, things like Metasploit or Isoserial.
I want to break that down for the listener because that sounds really complex. How does an AI tool actually interface with a hacking framework like Metasploit on this assembly line?
Think of it as having a highly skilled co-pilot who literally never sleeps. Normally, an attacker runs a scan, reads the output, manually figures out which vulnerability exists, and then manually configures a tool like Metasploit to launch the specific exploit.
Which takes a lot of time and expertise.
It does. But what this group is doing is feeding the output of their scans directly into an AI model. The AI analyzes the server's response, identifies the exact logic flaw, automatically selects the correct exploit payload, and just executes it.
Unbelievable.
And it even troubleshoots logic errors on the fly. So if an exploit fails, the AI reads the error message, adjusts the payload, and tries again in seconds.
That drastically changes the math for defenders. I mean, how do you even respond to that kind of speed?
It absolutely does. And it gets wilder. The AI is also being used to automate post-exploitation workflows and generate operational documentation.
Wait, they are writing documentation like a corporate IT department keeping track of standard operating procedures.
Yes. Because they're operating at such a massive scale, they need documentation for their own team to track which servers they control and how they got in. The AI automatically logs the successful attack paths.
That's insane.
It is. And this matters to you and me because this automation drastically lowers the barrier to entry. They don't need 100 elite hackers anymore. They just need a few smart architects and a well-tuned AI pipeline.
And once that AI pipeline actually breaks in, what are they doing to these servers? I know the report mentions some specific tactics for both Windows and Linux environments.
Right. So on the Windows side, defenders need to look out for web shells that lead to a framework called Bad Ice.
And IS is Microsoft's web server software, right?
Correct. A web shell is essentially a malicious script that gives the attacker a control panel on the server. But Bad Ice is a malware as a service variant that hooks directly into the web server process itself. It intercepts web traffic before the security software even realizes something is wrong.
It's deeply embedded. And what about the Linux servers? The report mentions they're using known local privilege escalation vulnerabilities, specifically CVE-2022-0995 and CVE-2021-3156. Now, I know naming CVE numbers doesn't always paint a picture. How does that actually work on the ground?
Let's unpack that mechanism because it's crucial for defenders to understand. When an attacker first breaks into a Linux server, they usually land as a low-level, unprivileged user. They can look around, but they can't change core system settings or install deep rootkits. They need root access, the keys to the kingdom.
Right.
Those CVEs you mentioned are vulnerabilities and fundamental utilities that come pre-installed on almost every Linux machine.
Like a flaw in the basic plumbing of the operating system.
Exactly. So, for example, one of those flaws involves a heap-based buffer overflow in how a program handles memory.
Okay.
By sending a very specifically crafted oversized command, the attacker can essentially overflow the designated memory space and overwrite the system's memory allocation.
Which tricks the computer into elevating their account.
Right. It instantly elevates their basic account to full root access. Mm-hmm. And because UAT-10147 has automated this entire chain, the moment they get a tiny foothold, the AI instantly runs these privilege escalation scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Before the defender's pager even goes off, the attackers have full deep-rooted persistence.
And they use that deep persistence to run massive search engine optimization fraud and, you know, steal data at an industrial scale. The speed and aggression of UAT-10147 is just terrifying.
It really is.
But what's equally concerning is that our second report from Trend Micro highlights a group taking a completely different, much quieter approach. They aren't aggressively scanning 170,000 URLs or kicking down the door. They are convincing software developers to voluntarily carry the malware right inside the walls of their own applications.
Yeah, we are shifting from brute force scale to an absolute masterclass in supply chain poisoning. The Trend AI report from Trend Micro looks at the NPM ecosystem.
Right. Let's set the stage for anyone who hasn't built software recently. The NPM registry is basically the lifeblood of modern web development. When a developer builds an app, they don't write every single function from scratch. If they need a calendar or a date calculator, they go to NPM and download a pre-written, open-source code package. It saves thousands of hours.
Exactly. It's built on convenience.
But Trend AI found 14 Trojanized packages masquerading as functioning calendar and streak utilities on this registry. And I really want to emphasize the word functioning.
That is the insidious genius of this campaign.
Yeah.
The packages actually work.
Yeah.
If a developer downloads one to manage dates in their application, it provides the exact utility promised.
Wow.
Yeah. It doesn't break the build. It doesn't throw weird errors on the screen. Because it functions perfectly, it evades that initial human suspicion.
Yeah.
But buried deep inside the package directory, the attackers planted a trap.
Right. The report notes they hid these files under the dist internal directories.
Which is where compiled, production-ready code is supposed to live. It's a very noisy folder that developers rarely look at line by line. And inside that folder, the attackers hid files with incredibly innocent-sounding names, like math-core.bin or calc-math.dat.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, and I have to stop you there and push back a little on this logic. If I'm doing a basic code review for my company, and I see my simple calendar app is trying to pull in something called a native math accelerator in a compiled binary format, I mean, alarm bells should be ringing, right? How does a professional developer just blindly wave a compiled binary through in a simple date utility?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to understand the illusion of trust and the sheer complexity of modern software architecture. The brilliance of this attack isn't just the malicious code itself. It's exploiting the psychology of how we build software today. Almost no application relies on just one package. They rely on massive dependency trees.
Ah, you're talking about transitive dependencies. For defenders, that's a huge blind spot.
Yes, exactly. Let's use an analogy. Imagine you are building a skyscraper. You hire a lead contractor you trust perfectly. But to get the job done, that contractor subcontracts the plumbing to 5 other companies, and those 5 companies subcontract the pipe fitting to 20 unknown individuals you have never met.
Right, just cascades.
In software, a developer installs one popular package, which automatically pulls in 5 others, which pull in 20 others. The developer never even sees that mathcore.bin file because it's buried 4 levels deep in the transitive dependencies.
So the developer trusts the top-level package, completely unaware that an anonymous subcontractor just installed a back door in the basement.
Exactly. And for defenders, the mechanism they use to execute this back door is brilliant for evading standard security scanners. Historically, malicious packages would use something called an install hook. Basically, a script that says, as soon as this package is downloaded, run my malware.
But security tools caught on to that, right?
Right. They got smart to that and started flagging suspicious install hooks. So these attackers completely remove the install hook.
Wait, then how does the malware run if there's no trigger during installation?
It triggers during execution. The delivery is handled by the package's main entry file, distindex.mjs. The attackers wrote a Trojan loader directly into the standard code. The exact moment the developer's application imports the calendar module to check a date, that import action silently launches the bundled binary in the background. No installation trigger required.
That's incredibly sneaky.
It simply executes as part of the normal application runtime, which bypasses a massive amount of legacy automated security checks.
And when that binary runs, it drops a Linux beacon called RedShell. This beacon connects back to a command and control framework called RedC2 4.0. And, you know, the history of the framework perfectly reinforces that industrialization theme we talked about at the top of the show. RedC2 isn't a custom one-off script written for this specific attack. It is a commercialized product.
It is essentially off-the-shelf enterprise software for cyber criminals. It was widely advertised by a threat actor going by the name Marl Broman on hack forums back in June 2026. He marketed it specifically as a command and control framework built from the ground up for evasion.
And it has a full professional release cycle. I mean, version 2.0 dropped in August 2025, version 3.0 in January 2026. They are doing major point releases, issuing patch notes, and supporting their customers just like a legitimate software company in Silicon Valley.
It is active, professionalized software development. And the capabilities of the RedShell beacon they introduced in version 4.0 are severe. Once it's deployed via that calendar package and executes on the developer's machine or the production server, it provides the attacker with a fully interactive bin shell.
Meaning they can type commands directly into the victim's server as if they were sitting at the keyboard.
Correct. Furthermore, it silently steals SSH keys, grabs browser credentials, and enables network pivoting. And pivoting is the real danger here for defenders to worry about.
Because they don't just stay on that one machine.
No. Once they compromise that single developer's machine using the calendar app, they use that machine as a beachhead. They pivot through the network using the stolen SSH keys to access databases, production environments, and source code repositories. The blast radius of trusting one bad open source package is catastrophic.
So we've tracked this evolution from aggressive global server attacks using AI pipelines to silently infiltrating our developer libraries through complex dependency trees. But the frontier of this automated cybercrime is pushing into an even more unconventional space. It is moving out of the data center and into your commute.
Yeah, we are crossing the bridge into the physical world. The expanding Internet of Things.
Our third source today is a fascinating report from Kaspersky. In June 2026, they discovered a brand new malware family, and this one is specifically infecting Dauphin Android-based vehicle head units. We're talking about the smart screen right in the center of your car's dashboard.
This is a significant escalation in the threat landscape. Kaspersky noted this is the first documented case of malware discovered on a car head unit, with an infection chain specifically engineered for that type of device.
So mechanically, how does a car dashboard catch a virus? It's not like you are browsing sketchy websites or downloading pirated movies while merging onto the highway at 70 miles an hour.
You aren't, but modern cars are constantly talking to the internet. The malware spreads via a legitimate built-in system updater app on these Dauphin units called TW-Core.
TW-Core, okay.
Yeah, com.tw.core. This application is supposed to collect basic vehicle analytics and download authorized software updates from the manufacturer using an MQTT message broker hosted on a domain called cardoor.cn.
Let's quickly clarify MQTT for the listener. It is a very lightweight messaging protocol, heavily used in smart devices and the Internet of Things, right?
Yes. MQTT operates on a publish-subscribe model. It is perfect for low bandwidth environments, like a moving vehicle connecting to cell towers.
Right, because cell service can be spotty.
Exactly. So the car subscribes to an update topic, and when the manufacturer publishes a new software version, the car downloads it. But the attackers manage to completely weaponize this legitimate update channel.
But how do you hijack an official update channel? Was the connection not encrypted, or did the manufacturer leave the server wide open?
It comes down to a lack of proper authentication and validation on that update server. The attackers were able to compromise the backend infrastructure and swap out the legitimate update payload for a malicious APK file, an Android application package, via a dropper dubbed Jar Service.
So the car reached out to the official server, asked for the latest update, and the compromised server just handed it the malware.
Yep, and the car blindly trusted it because it came from the official domain. Now, thankfully, Dofun patched this vulnerability following Kaspersky's responsible disclosure, but the mechanism is what defenders need to focus on. They abused the implicit trust the hardware has in its own creator.
And Kaspersky was able to attribute this attack with high confidence to a specific threat actor, the Mayu Group.
Yes, and the Mayu Group's history tells us exactly what their endgame is here. They were the architects behind the massive BADB box ad fraud scheme.
Oh, wow.
It was such a colossal operation that in July 2025, Google actually filed a lawsuit against 25 individuals in China just to try and dismantle the botnet infrastructure.
So what does this all mean for the person driving the car? Why go through the immense technical trouble of hijacking a vehicle's update server? It's not like my car head unit stores my banking passwords or my corporate network keys.
You're right. It's not about stealing your personal data. It's entirely about your car's connectivity. These Android head units, whether they are installed at the factory or bought as aftermarket upgrades, almost always have embedded SIM cards to provide internet access for real-time navigation, music streaming, and those software updates.
So essentially, my car's dashboard is just a smartphone on wheels.
Exactly. And to a cybercriminal running an ad fraud ring, a smartphone on wheels is incredibly valuable real estate.
Because while I'm sitting in rush hour traffic, completely oblivious, my car's background processes could be secretly clicking on thousands of hidden advertisements generating fake revenue for the Mayu Group.
This raises an important question about the economics of the rapidly expanding IoT attack surface.
Yes, that is exactly what is happening. And there's a specific reason they want your car.
Why not just use a server farm?
Because when security companies look for ad fraud, they look for millions of clicks coming from data centers or known cloud providers. That traffic gets blocked easily. But your car has a SIM card connecting to a major mobile carrier. It has a rotating residential IP address.
Oh, I see. So the malicious traffic looks perfectly legitimate. It just looks like a regular person on their cell phone.
That is the ultimate disguise. They are transforming anything with an Android OS and a SIM card into an untraceable moving node in a global fraudulent network. Your car becomes a proxy for cyber criminals, laundering their traffic through your cellular connection. It is a total paradigm shift in how we think about botnets. It is truly wild when you step back and look at it. When we pull all three of these sources together, the big picture for you, the listener, becomes sharply clear. If you've ever typed command to install a software package without checking its dependencies, or if you've ever just hit accept on a smart device update, these reports should totally reframe how you look at the digital world. The era of the lone wolf hacker typing in the dark is officially over. We are dealing with a highly sophisticated, industrialized machine.
Without a doubt. We've seen UAT-10147 using AI-driven pipelines to automate the exploitation of servers at a global scale, fundamentally changing the speed of attacks. We've seen Marlboro-Manan commercializing the Red C2 framework, proving that cybercrime has a software development lifecycle just like legitimate tech companies, using stealthy transitive dependencies to poison our open-source libraries.
Right, and we've seen the Mayu Group turning the very cars we drive to work into mobile ad fraud bots by weaponizing the legitimate update channels we are supposed to trust. Modern cybercrime doesn't just look for broken windows. It capitalizes on the trust and connectivity woven into the fabric of our daily lives. They trust that you won't check every file in your software update, and they leverage your internet connection to build their hidden infrastructure.
And looking at all this industrialization leaves us with a final provocative thought to mull over as we consider where this is all heading. If cybercriminals are already using AI to autonomously select exploits and write their own documentation, and if they are successfully hiding undetected in the firmware of our cars and the deep dependency trees of our developer tools, how far away are we from the reality of disposable self-generating malware.
Wow, self-generating malware.
Imagine a future, and it might not be that far off,
right,
where the malicious code hidden in your smart appliances, your corporate environments, or your vehicles doesn't just wait for a command. Imagine it constantly rewrites its own firmware using onboard AI, adapting on the fly. It could change its entire signature, its behavior, and its communication methods every 5 minutes, rendering traditional signature-based detection methods completely obsolete.
Yeah.
How do we secure a connected world where the malware is as adaptable and as intelligent as the very devices we rely on every single day?
That is a deeply unsettling thought to end on, but it perfectly drives the point home. That dark room with the lone hacker is gone. The factory floor is wide open, the machines are learning, and the assembly line is moving faster than ever.
We just have to make sure our understanding of the threat and our defenses can keep pace with their innovation.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the industrialization of cybercrime. Keep questioning the code you trust, stay secure, and we'll see you next time.